This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Brazil, which is currently a film in town, is really a book that poses a fascinating philosophic question. How many people have read the book or seen the film? I'm not speaking to Amaratsim altogether. You saw it. You had no business to see it. You had no business to see it. The question posed by that film or that book is the following. Suppose you could recreate a little Hitler. Not a child of Hitler, not a replica of Hitler, but Hitler himself. Suppose theoretically that you could recreate Hitler. Would you be allowed to kill him before he does anything wrong or not? That's the question that that book deals with. And the book sets up a situation, theoretical, but for the philosophic question, valid, where Mengele, who's escaped to Brazil, has developed a process whereby he was able to take certain cells from the body of Hitler, and he was able to develop those cells into little Hitlers. So you might say, but environment also plays a part, it's not only genetics. So Mengele made 90 or so, I don't remember the figure, of these little Hitlers, and he distributed them all over the world to parents very, very similar in environment to Hitler's own parents. And he then ensured that the type of life that these kids were living and their families were living, again, was very similar to the type of life that Hitler lived. They put into an environment which is the same sort of class and the same sort of profession. The father has the same profession. The father dies at the same time, and so on and so forth. In other words, it's a controlled experiment as far as is possible. The genetics is identical, and the environment is as close to identical as possible. And he's got these little Hitlers all over the place, and he figures that statistically out of those 90 or so little Hitlers, I don't remember how many, 6 or 8 or whatever it is, are likely to be spot on. That's the theory. That's the process which he's developed. A fellow called Lieberman, who's obviously a caricature of Wiesenthal, discovers the plot and foils it and kills Mengele. Having done so, he himself is wounded in the process and is lying in hospital. And his young assistant comes to him and says, the job isn't over yet. Now we've got to get the little Hitlers. We've got to get all these little kids and we've got to kill them. We can't leave them roaming around the world. And he says, over my dead body. Absolutely not. They've done nothing wrong. We've fulfilled our purpose. We've foiled the plot. It's all over. That's the end of it. Until these little kids have done anything wrong, you can't touch them. And he takes his list of the names and addresses of the 90 or so families that harbor these little Hitlers, and he burns it. So really the film concludes that you don't have a right to kill these little Hitlers. Because the young assistant accepts it. He understands and he smiles and he accepts it. We're going to look this evening at the Torah approach to the problem. I don't say we're going to come out with a clear-cut yes or no as far as the problem is concerned, but we're certainly going to have an approach to it. And in so doing, we're also going to illustrate a little bit further the concept we developed 2 weeks ago of the respective places of philosophy and calculation in Torah reasoning. Do you remember that 2 weeks ago we developed the concept that in decision-taking in Torah, in deciding what to do, philosophy doesn't play a part. Then you've got to calculate, you've got to work it out according to the formula, according to the axioms, and the Torah's method of logic. That's how you have to reach your conclusions. It's a mathematical process, virtually. It's a scientific process of deduction to decide halachically what you're expected to do under any given circumstance. You cannot take a decision on the basis of philosophy. It appears philosophically correct that I should do ABC. However, there is a place for philosophy. We didn't fully go into the place for philosophy. We discussed the Midas Chassidus, the concept of taking a mitzvah a little bit further, even than it's required in strict halachic terms, that one needs philosophy for that. And a couple of other things we touched on. But today we're going to illustrate the damage that can occur to a person if his decision-taking process is a philosophic one, and the equal damage that can occur to a person if he doesn't involve himself in the philosophy of Judaism. They are both equally necessary in different parts. We're going to do that as well. In so doing, let's look at two interesting dinim that we were given in the Sedra this week. There are two gentlemen, two types of people referred to in the Sedra. The one is called a Mesis and the one is called a Mediach. A Mesis is a person who incites another person to Avodah Zorah, to some form of idol worship or other. A Mediach is a person who incites the majority of a city to Avodah Zorah. Now one would say that there's purely a quantitative difference here. The Mesis has incited one person or two people or 10 people, anything less than the majority of a city, and the Mediach has incited the majority of the city. But it's not quite so. It's not just a quantitative difference. We see some interesting things. In the case of the Mesis and the Mediach, the case of the person, the inciter in each case, has the same punishment, skila. He gets the worst of the four forms of capital punishment in Torah. Skila, which is translated as stoning. It's not quite stoning. What one really does is one throws him off a high building, and that usually kills him. If it doesn't, then one takes it a little bit further, but it's not sort of a whole lot of people coming and throwing stones at him. That's not the concept of skila at all. But it's the worst, the most ugly of the four forms of death penalty. That's what the Mesis gets and what the Mediach gets. What about the person who has been incited in the case of the Mesis? An individual who has been incited and he serves Avodah Zorah, he can't come and say it's his fault, he did it to me, he persuaded me. No, he has to bear his own punishment. What punishment does he get? Also skila. It's the same because the din is for Avodah Zorah, for idol worship. It is a capital offense. Idol worship is a capital offense. And the form of capital punishment is skila. So both the Mesis and the one who is influenced, who is incited, have skila. The Mediach also has skila. The Mudachim, those in the city who have been incited, they have saif. They're guillotined. That's the one, another one of the four forms of death sentence, where his head is, where he's beheaded with a sword. What is that difference? Firstly, there's a qualitative difference here in the death sentence. It's all very well to say, well, everybody gets the death sentence, but it's not quite so. The most severe death penalty is skila. The next one is sreifa. Sreifa means literally burning, but we don't throw the person into a fire. It's equivalent to shooting squad, really, today, in the sense that we pour some hot lead down him. So we don't do it with a gun, we pour it down his throat. And it's not a very pleasant death at all. That's the second worst one. The third worst one is saif. And then comes saif is the beheading, which we're just doing, and then comes chenek, which is strangling. And that's the most comfortable of the lot. In fact, the rope that we strangle him with, we cover with cotton wool so that it shouldn't hurt him. That's the most considerate of all the death sentences that we have. But here we see that whereas the person, an individual who has been influenced by the Mesis, receives skila, whereas a member of the city who has been influenced receives only saif. He receives a much easier form of death penalty. Why? What's the difference? In fact, how does the process work? We hear that there's a town where people have begun to worship idols as a result of A and B who have been inciting them. So we go to the city and we start counting up. We collect evidence. And when we find somebody who's committed idol worship, we put him on one side. When we find someone who hasn't, we put him on the other side. At the end of it, we count them all up. Now, until that point, the action has been the same, that all those individuals now, we've got in this bunch of people who have committed idol worship, all these people have committed the same offense, Avodah Zorah, idol worship, but they don't yet know what's going to be their punishment. It might be saif, it might be skila. What does it depend? On statistics. If they constitute the majority of the city when we finally count up, they'll only get saif. If they constitute the minority of the city, they'll get skila. So what's the difference? So we must say, for some reason or other, the mudachim, people who are part of the city, are judged a little bit more leniently than individuals. That also is difficult to understand. Because in other ways, the way we treat the city is much, much worse than the way we treat the individual. We say, Hakei taket yoshvei ha'ira hi lefi charif. You smite the inhabitants of that city by a sword. Hacharei motav et kol asher ba. Destroy it and everything inside it. Ve'et behemta lefi charif. And its animals, all by sword. You destroy the whole city. Nothing is left. It's an incredible thing. And in fact, Paskin's the Rambam. You smite every living soul inside it, lefi charev, by the sword, taf v'nashim, even the women and the children, im hutcha kula, if everybody was serving idol worship, v'nimtu ha'ovdim rubo, and if it was only a majority that was serving idol worship, makim et kola taf v'nashim shel ovdim lefi charev. Then you take all the little children and the women folk of those who serve, and you smite them as well. It's incredible thing. In the normal cases of Avodah Zorah, there's a mitzvah of skillah. There's a death penalty of skillah, of stoning, the worst of all the death penalties. Here there's only a death penalty of saif, the second easiest of all the death penalties. Yet here not only is the man himself killed, but his whole family is killed, and his dogs and his cats and his cows and his bulls and everything he has, it's all wiped out. And even his possessions, even his property, the houses are destroyed. Everything is burnt. Nothing is left of it. So which is more severe? Is it worse to be an individual who's been incited? Or is it worse to be part of an Ir HaNidachas, part of a city which has been incited? Secondly, and this is a more difficult question, when one has to smite a person who's done wrong, okay, it's easy to understand. A person has to be punished, somebody has to do the job, and the Torah lays down the laws as to who does the job, that's okay, one can understand it. You're giving someone something that he deserves. But smiting innocent women and children who have not done anything wrong at all. We're not talking where the women and children also served idol worship. There you certainly have to kill them as well. But we're talking where the women and children didn't. You had a husband who on the quiet, without the knowledge of his wife and children, used to go somewhere and serve idol worship, told his wife that he was at the office late on Wednesday nights or whenever it was. Meanwhile, he went off and is serving idol worship. She knows nothing about it. She's keeping a frum home, and she's taking challah when she bakes her challah, and she's lighting candles on Friday night, and she keeps a kosher home, and she keeps taras and mishpocha with perfect precision, and everything she does as a Jewish woman should do, absolutely. And she davens, and she says kriya shema, everything, yira shema, and wonderful. And she's raising her little children to do the same, it's all fantastic. Unbeknown to them, the husband goes off and does avodah zorah once a week, take that same woman and the children, you smite them. Okay. I'm not going to ask, but it's cruel to do that. How can you do such a thing? Because we've already established that we don't use philosophy in psak. That's the din, that's what you have to do. Okay. What I am going to use the philosophy is to ask a more basic question. That is, we learnt a couple of weeks ago that the purpose of all the mitzvahs in the Torah are to refine an individual. If you remember, the Rambam said the whole purpose of all the mitzvahs are to make you a more fine person. So you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hora, not just because you're damaging the other person, but you damage yourself by being so insensitive as to talk Lashon Hora. And you're not allowed to eat treif because that harms you, it makes you a coarser person. And you're not allowed to mix meat and milk because it makes you a coarser person. And you've got to keep Shabbos because that refines you. Each mitzvah one has to look at philosophically in terms of how does this mitzvah refine me? How does this mitzvah make me a better person? And we've discussed if the mitzvahs aren't making you a better person, there's something wrong with the way we're keeping the mitzvahs. And that really is what Hillel meant when he said to the goy, the whole Torah is what is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. That's the whole thing. In other words, to reach the highest level of refinement. Everything else is just the embroidery around that. It's just this expansion on that theme. But the theme is, be a mensch. That's the basis, that's the essence of Torah. There's nothing more than that and nothing less than that. What it is first and foremost, be a mensch. That's what it is. Okay, so the Torah is so particular about all the little things you've got to do. You must do this and you mustn't do this because it can affect you. And here we go, and we mercilessly cut down women and children who've done nothing wrong. What effect does that have on us? Has a good effect on us? Makes us fine? Makes us sensitive and kind? Must instill cruelty into us. That kasha the Rishonim, that question the Mefarshim on the Chumash ask. Now in looking at this, one has to understand one principle. Let's answer the first question first. That is, which is more severe? The Ir HaNidachas, the city that's gone wrong, or an individual who's gone wrong? The answer is,
As an individual, the individual who's gone wrong is worse. As a community, a member of Iran Idachas is worse. Let's understand. The Jew constantly lives two roles. He's an individual, unique, separate, and different from everybody else. And simultaneously, he forms part of a tzibur. He forms part of a community. He has responsibilities to himself. He has responsibilities to the community. He has his own private and personal identity. He has an identity as part of the community. From the point of view of an individual, looking at a person in his individual capacity to commit an avera of avodah zarah, to perform idol worship, it's the worst thing you can do. It's one of the three worst forms of avera there is. Skila, no question about it. But what happens if your whole city's gone cocktail? Then as an individual, you're less responsible. It is amazing to what extent halacha acknowledges the effect of a society on the individual. Remember, the society in which you live has tremendous effect on the individual, and let nobody say it doesn't affect me. I'm different and I can manage without it. It doesn't work like that. Everybody is affected by his society. I went to a little town in the Free State on business this week, and I was looking around at the people there. Blank expressions, not a single interesting face. You stop and talk to people, nothing interesting to talk about. What do they do with their spare time? Watch television and play rugby. It's a town. That's a place. You're not allowed to live in such a town. Now, any one of us would know that you're not allowed to live in such a town, because you can't say, I'll live there, but I'll be alright. You can't be alright in a town like that, because you have a section, a part of one's life is the role one plays inside a community. And with that role totally unfulfilled, you cannot fulfill yourself as an individual either. But then it gets fine and one thinks, but I live in Johannesburg. But there are parts of Johannesburg where it's also impossible to live in. And then there are parts of Johannesburg where it's better to live in and parts of Johannesburg where it's worse to live in. Each person has to decide in terms of what he needs in terms of interrelationship and expressing himself in his community and with his community. And the Torah acknowledges the effect of the community to the extent that if an individual performs idol worship, avodah zarah, but so that his whole town, we reduce the level of responsibility on the individual. We say, you'll only get saif. That's a much lower form of death penalty, a much lower form of capital punishment. Because we acknowledge that part of the reason you did it was because the whole town was doing it. What then about your children? Why do your children have to suffer? Now we say, look, we've made things comfortable for you, we've made things easy for you, we've acknowledged the fact that you were under pressure to do idol worship. We've acknowledged that although we don't accept the pressure of the person who has been influenced by the Macy's, that not, if one individual comes and he pressurizes me and blackmails me to perform avodah zarah, even if he blackmails me with a threat on my life, we have no sympathy. If I do the avodah zarah, skilo is the answer. It's as simple as that. A man can come and hold a gun at me, and he can say, unless you perform avodah zarah, I shoot. And if I perform avodah zarah, I get skilo. That's not considered onus, that's not considered an emergency. But if I say, nobody pressurized me except the whole town was doing it, that we consider as a more valid pressure, as a more valid excuse than having a knife held at your head. That's the extent of environmental pressure. The environment is stronger than a gun at your head. And if you're in a good environment, the social pressure to be good is stronger than the social pressure, than the pressure if I would hold a gun at you. And say, look, you've got to increase the standard of your kashrus or I shoot. The environment has a stronger pressure than that even. The fact that everybody's doing it, and that, much stronger pressure. And if that pressure is used correctly, one is able to utilize it to raise oneself. If that pressure is used incorrectly, it can destroy oneself. And so we acknowledge the pressure of the town. But then we're finished with you. Okay, we've reduced your punishment from skila, from stoning, to saif. Now we take a different view. Now there's a community here that has to be judged. Not individuals, a community. The town of so-and-so has to be judged. Because when we look at the tzibur in halacha, a tzibur, a community in halacha, as it does in secular law, it has a personality of its own. It has a legal personality. One relates to the tzibur, one relates to the community as something that one can judge. Sometimes one judges the tzibur. The tzibur can bring a korban, can bring a sacrifice. It can make appointments. It can have property. It can own things. Eretz Yisrael belongs to the tzibur. The land of Israel doesn't belong to a group of Yechidim. It doesn't even belong to the sum total of Jewish people. It belongs to a different concept, the Tzibur. The Tzibur, the community, is not the sum total of the individuals. It's much more than the sum total of the individuals. It's a new concept, it's a new being that has a relationship to the world all of its own. And now one has to take that Tzibur, one has to take the community of such and such a town and judge that community. In judging the community, one has to look at it as follows. Assuming for a moment I'm walking down Pritchard Street and I see a young man beating up an old man. And the old man's on the floor, on the ground, and he's crying for help. What's my immediate reaction? If I'm not totally apathetic, I'll try and climb in and get the young man off his back. But I didn't see that just down the road, the old man had murdered the wife of the young man. Then it's different, and my reaction is different altogether. Now I'm going to help the young man get hold of this old man. But I didn't see what the wife did to the old man just before round the corner. So at what point are we do we have sufficient knowledge to take a decision and to make a judgment? When do we know enough? So one takes a yochid, one takes an individual. It's okay, so it's an individual that has to be judged. A murdered B. We call a court case and we find out all the facts. And if it's true that A murdered B and that's the end of the story, then A gets the death sentence. That's it. When it comes to a community, one has to look at it in the same way. There's a community here, a town which is committed in Avera. A town now, not only which is committed in Avera in a private sense, but in a communal sense, the town is committed in Avera. And a communal Avera is much more severe than an individual Avera. And it's again more severe than if all the individuals would have committed the Avera as individuals. It's now the community that's committed the Avera. Who then is the pursuer and who is being pursued? We know that if a community is committed in Avera, and the larger community doesn't act, the Ribbono Shel Olam takes it out on the whole community. That's it. Then there's a cancer in the community, and the whole community has to have it taken out of it. One has to understand that when there's a community that's gone wrong, that's gone sick, that community is threatening the life of the bigger community. It's exactly like a cancer. You've got a part of the body, chas v'sholom, which is threatening the life of the rest of the body. You have to cut it out. And what happens if the only way you can cut it out is by cutting out some healthy parts as well? You have to cut out the healthy parts as well. But what are you doing? Are you cutting up a man or are you saving a man? What is a shochet doing? Is a shochet killing an animal or is he providing food for people? What is a surgeon doing? Is he cutting open somebody or is he healing somebody? What is a teacher who scolds a pupil doing? Is he educating somebody or is he humiliating somebody? One has to see things in their correct perspective. The initial reaction is he's humiliating. You've got to look at it carefully. Maybe he's not, maybe he's educating. It's the same action. But one has to see it in its context, otherwise one sees it wrong. Says the Rambam. Kol ha'oseh din be'ir ha'nidachas, anybody who judges and carries out the judgment, executes the judgment on an ir ha'nidachas, ha'rezeh kemakriv oilo kalil, that's like a person who's bringing a total oilo, a total burnt offering, v'lo oide, not only that, elo shemesalek charoin af me'yisrael, but he's also removing God's anger from the Jewish people. That's an incredible thing. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk here in our Sedra, Laman Yoshev Hashem Mecharon Apo. The Ribbono Shel Olam should return from his anger. Umevi Aleihem Brocha V'Rachamim. And he brings blessing and mercy to Am Yisrael, to the people of Israel. Shenemar V'Noson Lecho Rachamim V'Richam Cho V'Yibecha. As it says in that same Pasuk, the Ribbono Shel Olam will give us mercy, and he will have mercy on us, and he will increase us. What does that mean? Says the Rambam. You've got to understand when you're wiping out these innocent people. You're not wiping out innocent people. You're saving all the other innocent people. Because if you don't wipe out these innocent people, the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to wipe out a whole lot of other people. Because there's a cancer in that community. And if that cancer is allowed to grow any bigger, it's going to claim the lives of a lot more innocent people. And therefore one looks at what one's doing and one says, am I killing some innocent people or am I saving many innocent people? Just depends how you look at it. Says the Rambam, you've got to look at it from the point of view of what you're doing to save the rest of Klal Yisrael.
There's a whole community like that, even those people who weren't involved in the crime.
The children of those people who were? No. But their money is, their possessions are. Right? So the families of those who did, why are the others not? The tzaddikim are not wiped out because they've shown themselves to be not part of the community. They've shown themselves to be separate from the community. It's possible to achieve that. One shouldn't move into a community on that basis. And the Rambam says the reason they lose their money is because they have no business living there. But the fact that they remain tzaddikim shows that they as individuals are not part of the community. So they're excluded. But the children of the idol worshippers and everybody's possessions is wiped out. And says the Rambam, the question is, why does the Rambam put this in his book of halachas? Why does he put this in the Yad HaChazaka? He should put this last little thing that we've just learned, he should put in the Moreh Nevuchim. It's a philosophy. It's not a philosophy, it's a halacha, it's a law. That's how you've got to go into an Irani Dachas. That's how you must approach an Irani Dachas. You must approach it on the basis that what I'm now doing is I'm saving a whole lot of other people. Unfortunately, the only way I can do it is by wiping out a certain number of innocent people. But in the process of so doing, I'm saving millions and millions of other innocent people. Why is it so important to do it with that state of mind? Because then it doesn't bring about cruelty. What was our second question? How can one go into such an action and wipe out innocent people and have it not affect my own status? Have it not affect my own stature? How can I kill out little children and women and remain sensitive and avoid becoming cruel by nature? I might have to kill hundreds, I might have to kill thousands of people in one day. How is that not going to affect me? How am I going to avoid becoming hardened to it? Says the Rambam, depends how you go into it. If you go into it, oh, that I'm killing little children, of course you're going to become cruel and you're going to become insensitive. But if you go into it, oh, it's a chas v'sholem, it's a terrible thing, I have to kill little children, but that's the only way I'm going to save all those other people out there, then you've got a different concept altogether. And what we have here is that despite the fact that one's committing the type of action which the Torah would regard abhorrent to the extreme under any other circumstances, wiping out innocent people, killing innocent people is something that the Torah would regard absolutely abhorrent in any situation other than this. Right? And here it's absolutely innocent people, they've done nothing wrong. Nevertheless, the power of the chesed one is simultaneously doing for the tzibur, the kindness one is showing the community at large, is so powerful that it's able to override this enormous action of wiping out the innocent women and children. Right? To say a bad thing about a person, about one person, just to say something nasty, to humiliate a person, the Torah says, chas v'sholom, that you should do such a thing. You should humiliate a person, it's like murdering him. What's so wrong with that? As we've learned, not just the harm you're doing to him, but it must desensitize you. It must make you less godly. If you can do such a thing to another person, it must reduce your stature. Just to say a bad word about someone. What about murdering somebody? That's absolutely unacceptable. And murdering two people? And let's say they're two bad people. Not chayav misa, they're not guilty of any capital offense, but they're bad, wicked people. Still you're not allowed to do it. Chas v'sholom, how can you do such a thing? And to murder five such people? And to murder five people who are good, who didn't do anything wrong? And to murder thousands of people who didn't do anything wrong? As much as that has the potential of destroying our spiritual status, the chesed, the kindness we're doing to the community at large, is so powerful that it outweighs it by far. And now this is the concept, this is the chiddush that we have this evening. A new concept. There are two kinds of chesed. There's chesed one can do with individuals. One might do chesed with one individual, with 10 individuals, with 1,000 individuals, but it's still individual chesed. That's a wonderful mitzvah. Chesed is one of the most important and one of the biggest mitzvahs. Kindness. It's one of the things, one of the pillars of Torah. That's kindness with individuals. But that doesn't come anywhere near chesed to a tzibur, kindness to a community, which is a different concept altogether. Now, we did touch on it last week, because we talked of business. We talked of one's profession in terms of yishuv ha'olam, in the sense that through one's profession and through one's business, one is in fact occupied with the needs of the world at large. And to be occupied with the needs of the world at large is showing chesed, is showing kindness to the world at large. We did touch on that concept already, that it's possible for a person to be occupied in concepts, to be occupied in thoughts and concerns that affect the whole world. But this is a qualitative thing, this is not a quantitative thing. Quantitative is, I do chesed to one person, I do a chesed to my wife, that's one kind of chesed. I do a chesed to my wife and family, that's more chesed. I do chesed to my wife, family and friends, that's more chesed. I do chesed to my wife, family and 2 million friends, that's fantastic chesed. But I do chesed to a community. That's a different quality of chesed. It's new horizons in chesed. The man who's able to be concerned with a community is a different man from the man who's able to be concerned even with a lot of individuals. There's one side of a person which is terribly important, and that is to respond to the needs of an individual. And not only one individual, but many individuals. That's necessary. It's part of one's avodas Hashem. That's the ability to do chesed, to respond and to anticipate the needs of an individual or individuals. But there's another aspect to chesed which is even more important and more far-reaching in its effect on an individual. And that is the ability to respond to the needs of a community, to the needs of a tzibur. That's something else altogether. And so powerful are the effects of chesed to a tzibur that it's able to outweigh the effects of wiping out a whole city of innocent people, or a lot of them being innocent people. Because in the sum total, in the general picture, what you're doing is a chesed, a kindness to the tzibur, to the community. What opportunities do we have for mitzvahs for chesed to the community? The Gemara talks in glowing terms always about a person who is osek b'tzorchei tzibur, a person who is occupied with communal matters, a person who is concerned with communal affairs. Again, in completely different halachic terms to all the other kinds of chesed. A man who is busy... A community of 25 people, but here's the gabbah. He sees everybody's alright, there's a shechita, that there's a butcher, that the Shabbos is alright, that there's tzedakah for those who need it. He's involved. There's a shul, that there's a beis hamidrash, that there's a cheder teacher, that there's sifrei Torah, that there's a mikveh. That's his job. In addition to the other things he does, he's the gabbah of a community of 25 people. Halachically, he's in a completely different category to a man who might care for 2 million people, but individuals. Each one he looks after as an individual. That's not osek b'tzorchei tzibur. That's not a gabbah, that's not a parnas. It's a different concept altogether. What's the difference? One's doing more chesed than the other, one's doing chesed with millions, and the other's only doing chesed with 25. But the one is relating only to individuals, and the other understands the concept of a tzibur. And a tzibur is big. Why is a tzibur big? Very simply. Because there's no such thing as a tzibur of 25 people. The tzibur is the whole of Klal Yisrael. The whole of the Jewish people is the tzibur. Now, in the same way as if you can't do chesed to your wife, if you don't treat your wife with kindness, you can't claim to be a Baal Chesed. You can have a person, you remember in the marriage shiur we did it some time ago, where Rav Chaim Vital says that the person's whole stature in spiritual development is measured in terms of the kindness with which he's able to relate to his wife. And he says, he's not interested. You can have a man who goes and visits every sick person in the whole country and who raises fortunes for tzedakah and gives his life for other people, but he doesn't treat his wife properly. Is that person a nobody? That's all. And the reason he's doing all those other things is because he wants a bit of credit. The measure of chesed starts with one's own family. That's where it starts. A person who doesn't know how to treat his wife doesn't know how to treat anybody, because that's where it all starts. So it is in the case of a tzibur. Your own tzibur, your own community, is merely a fact of chesed outwards to the broader community altogether. If you can't do chesed to your own immediate community, you can't be concerned with the concept of tzibur at all. The way we introduce a person to the concept of a tzibur, to the concept of a community, is through his own community. The same as we introduce a person to chesed through his own immediate family, and then we extend it further. So we introduce a person to his communal responsibilities by the immediate community first. Once he's acknowledged the concept of a tzibur, of a community, then it's easier to enlarge on it and say, you know, the tzibur is not just your little community in some little town somewhere in the Free State. That's not the total of the tzibur. There's a South African Jewish community, and not only a South African Jewish community, there's a world Jewish community, and not only a world Jewish community, there's a world human community. That's all part of the tzibur ultimately, and one has to understand it as such. But you can only start doing that when he relates to a community. As long as he's relating to individuals, no matter how many individuals, there's no way you can bring him onto a relationship with the tzibur. The alarm clock rings in the morning. Now it's a question, do I get up or don't I get up? What is one way up? If one gets that far as weighing it up before one falls asleep again, then one weighs up, you know, I went to bed very late last night. So, if I get up now, and I don't go to the, if I now go to the davening, my day is ruined. It's the needs of the individual. But after all, it's good for me to daven with a minyan. Which is more important? I'm sure that I'll learn better tonight and everything will be better if I stay in bed. Okay, someone decides to stay in bed. Or, one says, no, tired and all the rest of it, but I know if I don't daven with a minyan, the davening is no good. So up I get, that's it. Tired, too bad. That's one way of solving the problem and handling the problem. Another way of the problem is completely different.
how tired I am or how good it is for me to daven with a minyan is irrelevant in the light of the broader need. There's a need for a minyan. The tzibur needs me. The tzibur needs a minyan. Now you can't start weighing up. I'm tired, I'm not tired. That just doesn't come into it. Now there's a need of relating to a tzibur, which is a much bigger concept than all the other little weighings up that one does. And the thrill of getting out of bed for the tzibur is a much bigger thrill, in fact, than getting out of bed just for oneself. It's already quite a thrill to make it to the minyan on time and to be there 5 minutes early so that your tefillin can be on before the minyan starts, so that you can daven nicely and properly. That's already a tremendous level. That's something which is in fact very exciting. But it's a much more exciting feeling to be there 5 minutes early so that come 6 o'clock in the morning, the tzibur doesn't have to wait. Do you know how careful halacha is about tircha de tzibura, not troubling the tzibur? We roll our Sifrei Torah before the davening, not during the davening, so that the tzibur should not have to wait. All sorts of things, we go out of our way to make sure that the tzibur doesn't wait. Rabbi Akiva, who used to daven a long davening when he used to daven on his own, when he was davening with a minyan, used to daven quickly so that the tzibur shouldn't have to wait. There's a whole concept of making personal sacrifices, reorganizing oneself so that the tzibur shouldn't have to wait. But if the tzibur has to wait for a minyan, it doesn't matter. It's not right that the tzibur can't say Kaddish first thing in the morning because I'm not there. It's not right. There is a responsibility to a tzibur. Now, I'm not saying that that responsibility to the tzibur always outweighs the needs of the individual. No. Sometimes the individual does come first. How does the individual come first? Usually in a situation where the individual will be able ultimately to give to the tzibur more by looking after himself first. For example, a young man finishes school, like you, Menachem. Comes the question, I've got to give something to the community, so let me become a cheder teacher. I know more than the cheder kids know in South Africa, says Menachem. Look what I can do for the community. I can teach cheder. I'll be the best cheder teacher in the country. And he's right. On the other hand, he can say, you know, if I go to yeshiva for 15 years, I can come back and I can be a godel in South Africa. That's altogether different. So there you're putting the needs of the yochid first, but it's not really the needs of the yochid. You're saying that tzibur is better off if I go to yeshiva. That's a different calculation altogether. And when one's dealing with needs of the tzibur, when one's dealing with needs of the community, you've got to weigh it up with needs of the community. You can't weigh individual needs against community needs because you're using two different currencies. It's like trying to measure the distance to Pretoria with a thermometer. It doesn't work. It's completely different things, your needs and the community's needs. You can't say which is more important. Which is more, 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 500 meters? You can't say which is more. They're completely different measures. Which is more important, my needs or the needs of the community? Neither is more important. They've got nothing to do with each other. You've got needs and the community has needs, and both need to be fulfilled, and there shouldn't be a conflict between them. That's really what it is, and that's how one has to view it. Tzedakah, one can give charity to an individual. It's a wonderful thing. And it's worth tzedakah. One gives charity. One can give charity to many individuals. It's also a wonderful thing. But comes a Rosh Yeshiva to see you and to ask you for a donation for his yeshiva, that's not tzedakah to an individual. There you are buying a share in Torah in Judaism. You're buying a share in Jewish education. You're buying a share in Torah education. That's not just giving a man a bit of tzedakah. That's a completely different attitude and a completely different outlook to the whole concept of the role of tzedakah. Here the role of tzedakah is one of tzibur, one of community relationship, not individual relationship. Taking it one step further, one evening you can invite some friends over to your house to listen to some music and to have a cup of tea. That's very nice. Is that chesed? Probably not. Probably not even chesed. That's just normal derech eretz. It's just the way people, social give and take. You enjoy their company, they enjoy your company. They invited you 2 weeks ago, you owe them an invitation, you have them, you enjoy it together, that's fine, that's not chesed. You can have a situation where you hear that somebody needs a place to be. Somebody needs a meal, so you invite the person for the meal. Is that chesed? Yes. That's already chesed. But it's chesed to an individual. It's a wonderful thing. But comes here too, the concept of chesed to a tzibur. In our own little community here, I've mentioned many times that the Beis HaMidrash was established around Shabbos tables. That's how it was made. That's how it started.
That's how it became dynamic. That's how it developed equality. And that's how it's grown all over. That's the way it's been done. If one has somebody at one Shabbos table who one chooses to have as a friend, that's not chesed. If one has somebody at one Shabbos table who needs a place to go, that's chesed. But there's something much more important. There's a need of a tzibur. A community needs you to have people at your Shabbos table. Not because they have nowhere to go just, but because the whole dynamics of the community develops, revolves around that. It's there that things are talked out, it's there that people interrelate, particularly in a community such as ours where the time available for these things is very short. During the week, the shiurim, in the evening, people work hard in the daytime. People are in yeshiva, there's time a little bit. You have lunch together, you can have supper together. People are only in business, you can have an evening together. But when you're trying to become a Ben Torah and to be working at the same time, it's very, very hard. And there are things that have to be cut out, and very often it's social interaction which is cut out. So where's the time for social interaction? A community, in order to remain dynamic, needs social interaction. Only one place for social interaction. You spend time around your Shabbos table in any case. That's the place to have social interaction. That's the case, the place to be together, to exchange ideas together, to argue things out, to enjoy each other's company. That's where it's done. And if you don't like the particular person that's at your Shabbos table, so what? Doesn't make any difference. He's not at your Shabbos table because he needs it. He's not at the Shabbos table because you need him there. He's not at the Shabbos table as a social visitor because you've chosen to have him in that sense. He's at your Shabbos table because the tzibur needs interaction around the Shabbos table. But a person who doesn't understand that, a person who's out of that, is just not involved in the dynamics of a tzibur, in the dynamics of a community. In the same way as there are personal dynamics in any form of growth, so there are communal dynamics. And this is something that one has to understand and feel, that in each decision that is taken, there's an element. When people are living and learning together, there's an element of the tzibur's needs as well, the community's needs. You take a person and you help him with a gemara. You're not just doing a chesed to the individual. You're doing a chesed to the community, because by you helping him with his gemara, you're raising the whole standard of the learning in the Beis HaMedrash. Through that, you'll be able to draw more from it. Other people will be able to draw more from it. It's necessary for the tzibur that people help each other with their learning. It's necessary for the tzibur that when people have financial difficulties, they come to one another and they sort them out, they help each other. It's necessary that there should be nobody who doesn't, not just doesn't have a place to spend next Shabbos, but doesn't have a place to spend Shabbos for weeks to come already, because he's already booked up. That's the dynamics of the community. That's how it has to work, because the community needs it, the tzibur needs it. Comes the question, how does one avoid anarchy? The tzibur needs it. Now you can do all sorts of things in the name of the tzibur. The community needs somebody to be isolated. The community needs somebody to be eliminated. It's good for the community. This person is destructive here. You've got to get rid of him. Where does it stop? How does one determine what you can do in the name of the community and what you can't? And even more relevant, my community and your community, which comes first? My community has needs and your community has needs. There are 9 people davening here, and there are 9 people davening there, and now we've got to vie for the 10th person. Who's going to make up the minyan? I need it in my community, you need it in your community. Which one comes first? Here you also see the klal, you see the principle in the Iran Idachas, in this funny city that we're dealing with this evening. There's a community, the city itself, but that community is subjected to the larger community. It's in the interests of klal Yisrael that that community must be isolated. I can never do something that's in the interests of my community if it conflicts with the interests of the community at large. My community is only a method of developing outwards into the community at large. But if there's ever a conflict between my community and the community at large, that there can never be. So let's say there's a young man learning in my community, and if I send him to yeshiva, it's going to be a terrible loss for my community, because he helps everybody, he teaches everybody. It's all very... I'm not talking about you, Malachi. He helps everybody, and he learns with them, and he helps raise their standard. It'll be a terrible loss to my community if he goes off to yeshiva. But in terms of Klal Yisrael, it's terribly important that such a person should go to yeshiva and should develop his talents to the full. Chas v'sholom, there should never be any question of a small community taking precedence over the community at large. At any given stage, what one's real interest is when one's talking about one's obligations to the tzibur, one's talking about one's obligations to Klal Yisrael. One's talking about one's obligations to the Jewish people, not about one's obligations to one's own movement, or to one's own Beis HaMedrash, or one's own community. That is only a means of getting to the bigger one. But more important, in the area of avoiding anarchy, there's only one way that can be avoided. And that's with Shmir. Listening to what Halacha requires. It's only too easy to do anything in the name of a community. To murder people in the name of a community, to talk Lashon Hara in the name of a community, to be mevatel, to nullify, to denigrate people in the name of a community, to isolate people in the name of a community, to rob people and steal from them in the name of a community, in the name of a Jewish community even, all that is only too easy. One has to consult halacha. One has to check in each case exactly what the halacha requires when there's a conflict between the needs of an individual and the needs of a community. Let's say I have a case of Ir HaNidachas and we didn't have the Torah. I had a case where the whole city's gone off. I could start philosophizing anyway. I could philosophize that the whole city must be wiped out. I could philosophize that only the people who served idol worship should be wiped out. I could philosophize that nobody should be wiped out. I could philosophize anything I wanted. What's going to determine what I really have to do? That's Shmir. On the other hand, if I only have Shmir, if I only carry out the letter of the law, and I don't understand it clearly, I don't understand the principle involved, then there's even a bigger danger. So now I've decided I've got to consult halacha. In order to know whether what I must do with this Ir HaNidachas, with the city that's gone wrong, I must consult halacha. I look in the Rambam says, wipe them out. So out comes my sword and I go and I wipe them out. The result of that is I become a nobody. I become cruel, insensitive, and the effect of doing a mitzvah is absolutely negative on me. That's an incredible chiddush, that it's possible to do a mitzvah and the effect of that mitzvah is counterproductive on me. I'm worse off for having done the mitzvah. I become insensitive, I become a murderer, I'm cruel. Why? Because I didn't understand the concept. The concept is, I'm saving a big community. I'm saving Klal Yisrael. That can't be the basis for my decision because then we'll have anarchy. Halacha has to be the basis for my decision. The law is what has to decide whether I go into that city and I wipe them out or not. But once the law has told me I must go in and wipe them out, then I've got to have an approach. I've got to have a hashkofa. I've got to have a view, an angle as to why I'm doing it. What's the philosophy of my actions? The philosophy is not I'm wiping out those vicious people, those nobodies. No, the philosophy is I'm saving a lot of other innocent people. And unfortunately, the only way I can do it is by wiping out these people. And I have to do it that way. And here you have the combination of shmir, of hearing accurately and without philosophy, just clearly what is required, and then having decided now what is required, now philosophizing. How am I meant to do it? What am I meant to do? Exactly what attitude should I take to what I'm doing? And we see this actually in the pasuk itself. Following. The law yidbak b'yodcho me'uma min hacherim. Nothing from the destruction should stick to your hands. Now I'm going to use a bit of drusha, I'm going to use a bit of homiletics, I'm going to translate this slightly differently. Nothing, no effects of having been a destroyer should stick to your hands. When you're finished, your hands shouldn't have blood on them. When you're finished, you should be clean and you should be as refined, even more refined than you were before. More sensitive to kindness and to sympathy than you were before. Why? L'man yoshuv Hashem mecharon apoy. Because you've gone into it for the purpose of bringing God back from His anger. And as a result of that, the nosan l'chorachamim, He will give you mercy. The Ribbono Shel'olam will enable you to develop the middle of mercy, to develop the characteristic of mercy, although on the surface what you've done has been a cruel act. And the very next word, why? Because you've listened. You didn't philosophize, you heard clearly what he said. But you didn't just listen, you also did that which was straight. Just for a moment, I want to tell you about this concept of doing that which is straight in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ramban, the famous Ramban on Kedoshim Tiyur, says that one can land up keeping all the peripheries of the Torah and missing out on the essence. Just for example, you can come Shabbos, you make Kiddush, and you don't switch off your lights, and you don't go to business, and you don't do anything you shouldn't do, and you do all the things you should do, but it's still not a Shabbos. What's a Shabbos for? It should be a day of spiritual intensity. A day of learning, a day of talking, of being with your family, being with your friends, and learning Torah, and exchanging ideas in Torah. That's what a Shabbos should be. It says the Ramban, there's a mitzvah of tishbos. In addition to all the do's and don'ts of Shabbos, there's a mitzvah now that you're keeping all the do's and don'ts, tishbos, make a Shabbos. And it's possible to keep all the do's and don'ts, and not to make a Shabbos. Likewise, says the Ramban, it's possible to keep all the laws of Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat is that section of the Shulchan Aruch that deals with the laws of business. So it's possible to keep all the laws of business except one. You should do that which is straight and right. Now, sometimes you get a shaila, can I do A, B, or C in business? And you look in Shulchan Aruch and you see, you know, basically there's no din against it. There's no law against it, but it's not straight. It's crooked. You're crooking people, you're misleading them, it's not straight. But to say that there's a clear law against it, you can't. Says the Ramban, one has to be careful for that din as well. There's a din in addition to keeping all the do's and don'ts of Kosher Mishpat. There's another din of positively being straight in one's din. What one does should be straight, it should be genuine. The same thing here. One can perform the mitzvah of wiping out the Irani Dachas. But to do it because it's straight in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam, in other words, to appreciate the straightness of what you're doing, that's the art of wiping out the Irani Dachas. To be able to do something which on the surface appears cruel, and to understand that I'm not just saying, okay, to me it appears cruel, but the Ribbono Shel Olam wants it, I'll do it. That's not what we're saying. No. Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam want it? How can a loving, merciful God want something so cruel? And only when I've reached the answer and I understand it in its fullness, am I able to perform the mitzvah correctly, with the result that I have both tishma, my decision has been taken on black and white, I have to wipe them out. Then I philosophize. Why does God want this? Why does God consider this a straight thing to do? And I've come to the conclusion, because only this way will I be able to save millions of people. So unfortunately I'm being instructed to wipe out some individuals for the sake of an entire tzibur, of an entire community. That I've got to do. Then the result of that is that we retain our rachamim, we retain our ability to be sensitive and our ability to be merciful. And that really is the meaning of the very first sentences in the Sedra. Reb Tzvi spoke last night and he said that the brocha of Ki Asher Tishmu, we're told that the brocha that God will give is that we will listen to the mitzvahs. So Reb Tzvi said that means that the pleasure of doing the mitzvahs is your reward. The brocha is the doing of the mitzvah itself. But I want to take it a bit further, because on the surface, if that's what it meant, it should say, et ha-bracha, the brocha is, asher ta'asu es ha-mitzvah, so tishmeru es ha-mitzvah. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say the brocha is keeping the mitzvah. So the brocha is listening to the mitzvah. What brocha is there in listening to the mitzvah? That's the biggest brocha there can be. The ability to hear correctly, which is a brocha, I might tell you, it's something which very few people have, it's a gift. The ability simply to hear what somebody is telling you. With language, and sometimes with body language, and sometimes not even with body language, just to be able to perceive correctly the messages that are coming to you from your environment. That's an incredible bracha. And to be able to perceive it correctly in the Torah, that's also a wonderful bracha. It removes all conflict. Your tensions go away. What, must I do A or must I do B? And you start philosophizing. A seems more correct and B seems more correct. And tomorrow A seems more correct again, and the next day B seems more correct again. And you justify this way and you justify that way. And you eat yourself up with worry. And then you decide to do it one way, and then the next day you think, oh, but I was probably wrong. It should have been the other way. And there's just no end to it. That's klolo. That's curse. That's a terrible life to live. A bracha is when you have certainty. You know what you're doing. It's clear what you have to do. You understand what you have to do. How do you develop that? Tishma. Just by having the ability to listen clearly to what is expected of you. So we're told, the brocha is that you should listen to the mitzvahs, that you should hear the mitzvahs. But haklolo, the curse is, im lo tishmu mitzvahs Hashem elokeichem. The curse is the following. If you don't listen to the mitzvahs, that in itself is not yet such a curse. Okay, so you don't listen to the mitzvahs. The curse is, v'saltim min haderech asher anochi mitzaveschem hayom, v'aleches acher elokim acherim asher lo yedatim. Then you are going to depart from the way which I've commanded you, and you're going to follow strange gods. And you remember again, 2 weeks ago we established, 3 weeks ago in fact, we established that the mitzvah of using philosophy to make your decisions, or the issur of using philosophy to make your decisions, is the essence of idol worship. That's where it starts, because then Torah becomes opinions. It's my opinion that you should do it this way, so it's your opinion that it should be the other way. That's idol worship. Each one do what they think is right. That's not what Torah is. In Torah there's an objective truth for each individual, and that objective truth can be analyzed, provided there's tishmu, provided you're prepared to listen with an open mind. If you're going to approach halacha with what you think halacha should be saying, if you're going to listen to Torah with what you think the Torah should be telling you, then there's no way you're going to understand it properly. But if you're prepared to approach the Torah with an open mind and an open ear, and you're going to listen, what you're going to hear is going to be so clear, it's going to be so beautiful, it's going to be so obvious, that all tensions disappear and an amazing relaxation sets into you, which enables you even, chas v'sholom, if it's necessary, to wipe out a whole city because you know it's right. And most important of all, after wiping them out, remaining a mensch at the end of it. and so the boys in Brazil. It's a tremendous problem. The answer to those two people's problems were the young assistant wanted to wipe out the Hitlers, and Wiesenthal wanted said they hadn't done anything wrong. The answer is, ask a Shaila. That's a halachic decision now. What is the Torah? It's got to be Kishon. We don't philosophize. The boy has a very good argument why they should be wiped out. How can you do this? To leave these people that you know are Hitlers, and you're going to leave them in the community, at least one of them is going to be turn out destructive, at least one of them is going to do something terrible, and you're leaving them in the community, you're becoming responsible for anything they do in the future. Now this is Wiesenthal. Who am I to judge them? Who am I to decide that these people are evil? They've done nothing wrong, they still have free choice, they can still turn out all right, and only when they've done something wrong can I kill them, or can I hand them over to a law, to a court of law to have them killed? Which is right? There you need Tishmu. There you need to call in a rov, and you have to say, this is our problem, what is the halacha? And one thing, what the rov will say is another question, what he would say in that situation. But one thing is for sure, he would say, if you're going to go out and kill those little Hitlers, it's not out of anger and out of vengeance for the little Hitlers, because they're still innocent, they haven't done anything wrong. It's out of mercy, it's out of rachamim and sensitivity to the needs of the wider community.